It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Great to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Names from Georgia continue to bounce around the speculation mill surrounding what will soon be the Trump administration. So, back for a pre-Thanksgiving political breakfast. Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Political Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign, and Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Nathan Deal. Welcome back to you both, and happy Thanksgiving in advance.
Good morning, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Dennis.
Now, the last time we got together, it was before the election. Theron, I imagine that your blood pressure is more or less back to normal.
I'm getting there. I just returned from Barcelona, Spain. I had initially booked a round-trip ticket. I thought about canceling my return. But my mother, who listens to this show, she said, son, get over it. You're alive. Come on back to America. So I'm happy to be back here and looking forward to talking with Brian.
Now, there are a lot of Georgia names that are knocking around in the Trump administration. Will they or won't they? The one at the top, though, Tom Price, congressman from a district that's primarily Cobb County, chairman of the House Budget Committee, and one of those who's actually floated a substitute for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, Brian, Health and Human Services Secretary. If he were to be named, what would his impact be on that agency?
It would be such a great move for Georgia and for the country for Congressman Price. Chairman Price, I should say. Tom has had experience on all levels of government, and he is a policy expert, particularly a healthcare policy expert. This is extremely important for Georgia because once Congress does the repeal and replace, and we don't know yet what the replace is going to be, we at least have a substantive leader on healthcare policy leading the administration's charge on this. If he becomes a secretary, it'll be a conservative, market-based reform that is going to hopefully cost consumers less and make sure more people get coverage. You know, Republicans have an obligation to replace. If we do the repeal, we've got to replace. And we need somebody like Tom Price who's got serious policy chops at the helm. I am very excited about this. Very, very excited.
Is the replace that Congressman Price or any of the other Republicans, including Speaker Ryan, has floated an idea? Will that do what you just said, though, Brian, make it more affordable and keep everybody covered? Because the fear has been that the replacements that Republicans have proposed so far would not keep everybody who now has coverage under the umbrella.
We don't have everybody covered today because the exchange is broken. People can't afford their premiums, and their costs are going up by 25% every year, and they're not getting any choice amongst healthcare plans anymore because that's completely dried up. It's a broken system. So we need a fix. And so the onus is on us. In many ways, we are the dogs that caught the bus. That's a phrase being overused right now.
But, yeah, now what do you do when you've caught
it? Yeah, but now we've got to have a serious plan. Look, is it going to do everything everybody wants? No, but neither does Obamacare. You know, and we also are going to bring something to the table that the Democrats haven't, and that's going to be a concern about the cost curve of this plan over its lifespan.
I totally agree with Brian that Chairman Price would be an excellent choice to be the HHS secretary. I mean, he's been a person that has been very critical of Obamacare. I mean, he has been one of the many members of Congress who wanted to repeal it and never really offered a solution to replace it. But
I disagree with that. He really has. I mean, I agree with your sentiment that we haven't always focused on the replace. But Tom and Speaker Ryan actually have put plans together.
They have, but the problem has been that, you know, you and I have talked about this on the show, that you've had, I think, pretty close to 40 efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I think Chairman Price's solution was just kind of muddled within the long sort of baseless proposals that were presented by the Republicans. But let's look at this on the flip side. And I do agree that this will be good for Georgia. Congressman Price is a person who I have the utmost respect for. I've complimented him on this show before. I love riding to Washington, D.C. with him in economy comfort. He loves his aisle economy comfort seats.
That's why he's the budget committee chair.
Because even though I think he could be in first class, he chooses to take that free upgrade to Delta comfort. But if you're Congressman Price, Chairman Price, you're now one of the most powerful members of Congress. You are the most powerful member from the Georgia delegation because he's budget chair. Do you really want to tackle this issue of where we see a Donald Trump during the campaign was that I'm going to repeal it, I'm going to replace it, I'm going to get rid of Obamacare? Well, we are now less than two, 3 weeks into the president-elect Trump phase. I can't even believe I'm saying that right now. And he's even walked back some of the promises that he made during the campaign. He's readily admitted that you can't do everything. You've got to make sure that these people, these 20 million people who are insured, how do they keep their health care? But I think ultimately this will be a good move for Georgia, but it also we got to really look at Congressman Price's ambitions to maybe be governor. I mean, he's been mentioned to be one of the many Republicans that could actually run for governor in 2018.
He's been spreading money around the state in anticipation of that. Yeah,
absolutely. So I think the other thing that he's thinking about, and I know personally some of his closest advisors, they're trying to really figure out what's the trajectory after he's done being budget chair or if he becomes HHS secretary.
But if David Perdue, Georgia's junior senator, were named to some sort of post in the Trump administration, that would complicate the equation for Congressman Price as well, along with the equation for a whole bunch of other Georgia Republicans.
I think if Tom takes the HHS job, he is out of the governor's race, that it is a done deal. He needs to serve the full term, particularly because there's such a heavy lift involved here. There's going to be a lot of work that goes into it. And HHS secretary has one of the biggest budgets of all of the cabinet positions. It's one of the most monumental as far as how it impacts the daily lives of Americans. And he would definitely take it, in my opinion, because being a congressman, even if you're a chairman, is of you have limited power. Your ability to really enact change and enact laws and the direction of the country, you're one of 435, even if you are a chairman. You may have a little bit more power, but the ability to really change policy is limited.
I'm sitting here next to my good friend Brian, and I think this whole push for Brian to encourage Chairman Price to be HHS secretary, maybe Brian is trying to clear the way for a candidate of his choice to run for governor. I will be the first to say that if, and I agree with Brian, if Congressman Price wants to be governor, I think he doesn't take the HHS secretary job. But if I'm him and I look at the current field, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, Secretary of State Brian Kemp, and maybe a couple others, Lynn Westmoreland, who spent a lot of money campaigning during the state. I'm thinking he may think twice about it. But back to your point about David Perdue. This is a junior senator from Georgia that didn't waver. For him to come out and endorse him the way that he did and getting all the national recognition, you got to believe that he's at the table, Dennis, that he's probably taking a trip to New Jersey that hasn't probably been reported yet. And I think that his relationship with Tom Price will tell us a lot about whether Tom Price will be asked to be HHS secretary and also whether he'll take it. I mean, David Perdue is in a very, very powerful position right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, I spent a day with Perdue's chief of staff last month, and they were insiders from the get-go. You know, them and Jeff Sessions, with whom Senator Perdue is very close. They're very close friends in the Senate. And they are insiders at this juncture. They took a gamble, and it really paid off. And I would say the same is true for Tom Price. He stuck with Donald Trump throughout, even as many other members of the delegation, you know, just ran their own races and minded their own business, which at the time seemed like the, you know, the best strategy. But these two guys put their cards on the table, and they won.
Let's pick up on Jeff Sessions for just a moment. As senator from Alabama, he has certainly been a thorn in the side of the Georgia delegation when it comes to the water wars.
Absolutely.
There's been language that he has inserted in budget bills and in other places that have specifically targeted Georgia in the battle among Georgia, Florida, and Alabama over water. Brian, with Sessions leaving to be attorney general, does Georgia's strategic position, if not its legal position, improve in Congress when it comes to water? Because any solution will eventually have to be ratified by Congress.
You're absolutely right. And one thing that Alabama has had in as leverage against us is their senators have more seniority than ours do. You know, Sanksbe left after two terms, and
Senator Chambliss, yeah.
Senator Chambliss left it to two terms, and Johnny is just now getting into his third term. So they've had that advantage, and that is very important in the Senate. I'm concerned. My only concern about Jeff Sessions as Attorney General has nothing to do with his ideology, his experience, or his worldview. It is the fact that he's from Alabama, and he's tried to take away our water. And that really bothers me and concerns me if DOJ is ever in a lawsuit between the states, ever involved in any way. I am concerned about him, you know, putting the thumb on the scale for Alabama and Florida, because this is a huge issue for us. I mean, this is a call out the National Guard and close down federal military bases big issue for us. I mean, we've got to fight on these issues and make sure that we keep our water rights, because it is critical to our families and to our economy.
So does Georgia take another look at the Tennessee River then, maybe?
We should invade. At this juncture, we should just invade.
Theron, let me pick up with you for a moment. After the Georgia Democrats caught their breath following the results of the election, they were looking at something that wasn't just the loss of the White House. They were looking at a real loss of influence in Congress, and the bench here in Georgia is not as deep as it might need to be to run every race statewide. Some very prominent names, just not a lot of depth on that bench. So where do Georgia Democrats go from here?
I've said this before, and I especially harped on this in 2014 after we lost in Georgia with Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter, that we needed to do an autopsy. Well, I'm still feeling like we need to do an autopsy. But the problem is, Dennis, is that before you can do the autopsy, you got to actually swallow the pill that the patient is actually dead. And what do I mean by that? The way that we try to run races unsuccessfully in Georgia at a time where we have redefined rock bottom is trying to appeal to an independent, moderate Republican voter that, quite frankly, is not going to vote Democratically. And so what I'm most frustrated about in Georgia is that this time around, Dennis, we actually had the resources. The Hillary for America campaign spent money here. The Democratic National Committee spent money here. The Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee spent money here as well. Even Jim Barksdale spent closely to, I think, $3 million
quite a bit of
his own money. So the challenge in Georgia was not a resource problem this time. It was more of actually making the choice to put the resources where they mattered most. Now, the bright spot for Democrats is this. We just turned Gwinnett County into a blue county. Cobb County, which has been a Republican stronghold for so many years, is actually a blue county now. And then you look at places like Henry County and even Douglas and other counties, we did very well there. So I've been one that's been talking about the demographic shift in Georgia, and I think we saw this. I want to go a step further, Dennis. I think that DuBose-Porter should do all Democrats a favor in the state and himself, and he should resign. We cannot continue to allow people who are responsible for electing Democrats, for recruiting candidates, to continue to run this party. I'm frustrated because I think that at a time where, yes, Hillary Clinton did not become president, we missed an opportunity. I mean, there are clearly voters out there that we needed to attract. And if you look at the coalition that was built around OSD, which many Democrats and conservatives voted against this amendment.
And that was the Opportunity School District Governor Deal's plan, which was sometimes called the school takeover plan.
Right.
And you're saying build on the coalition that rallied against it.
But the point that I'm making is this, Dennis, is that we have got to do something different. We cannot continue to do the same thing. And I'm not only calling out DuBose-Porter to resign and step down, but more importantly, I am begging all Democrats to join me in the call to have a meeting of the minds. Let's focus on what went wrong. Let's admit that we need an autopsy and at the same time admit that the patient is dead. But then let's put together a plan and build on this momentum from these counties that I mentioned and also how people came together to defeat OSD. That's what I think we do to move forward.
And DuBose-Porter is currently the chair of the state Democratic Party. Brian, with Republicans, there's a completely different problem. They continue to have huge majorities in the legislature, and a big presidential win can paper over a lot of differences. How long does that paper last? And are Republicans looking at splits along various lines, like religious freedom bills or perhaps further extension of legalization of marijuana in the state or casino gambling, any one of a number of things that could come up this session?
This election was very telling for the future of politics in Georgia. I concur with what Theron said. There were a lot of things here that were indicators. And even though Trump won and won by approximately the same margin as Romney, he won it in a different way. He didn't crack 51%, whereas Romney had around 53%. So that's concerning. We have to hope to some degree that, it was just some Republicans who didn't want to vote for this particular nominee. I do think that was the case in Cobb County. That's why Cobb County turned blue. I don't think that is an indicator of where Cobb is at the moment. Certainly it's going to be long-term a concern in Cobb. But Johnny Adison won Cobb at the same time that Hillary Clinton did. So I wouldn't say that that's completely flipped yet. Gwinnett is really, really a challenge for us now because we do have so many legislative seats there, and those are getting encroached upon. We lost one member in Gwinnett. We had several that won by much tighter margins than they have in the past. The Gwinnett chair, Charlotte Nash, who's done a great job there for many years, got 52% of the vote against someone who had no money and didn't campaign hardly at all, at least not, didn't have a notable presence, you know, outside of local meetings. So there were some spots that Democrats are going to try to capitalize on. This, as much as anything, brings back what I have been saying for as long as we've been doing this show, me and Theron. Republicans have got to broaden our base in Georgia. We've got to reach out to minorities, or we're going to lose Cobb. We're going to lose Henry. We're going to lose Gwinnett. We're going to lose these counties, and that's where the population is. So we can't just win on rural turnout. The people aren't there.
It's funny, you're both saying each of our parties has to widen its appeal, maybe to different constituencies, but where do you overlap? I mean, where do you clash and try to pull those same voters into your tent?
I think they're trying to get white women as much as possible. I think that's the target if I'm them. And as Theron said, it's still a tough sell. But I think particularly white college-educated women is probably your best shot. And for us, it is South Asians who are now a significant minority here and one that's got a lot of money. And also African Americans, because they have the sheer numbers. They are the biggest minority in the state.
So, Theron, are those minority groups, are those the ones where you're going to have Republicans trying to woo more of them over and Democrats fighting hard to keep them?
You know, I called my mother the morning after the election day, and what she said to me, what I think was so epic, she said that we now know how many, not all, white voters felt in 2008 when Barack Obama was elected president. And she went on to further say that we not only got to appeal to more white voters, but the real issue here is, which is a little different than what Brian is saying, is that we've got to motivate our base more. What Bernie Sanders was able to do is he reignited a very liberal wing of our party that we should not be ashamed of at a time where we're now the opposition party. We've got to start focusing on the issues that are going to motivate our base, but also make an appeal to these educated white women who did not vote for Donald Trump in places like Henry, Cobb, and Gwinnett. Now, in doing so, we've also got to go back, and Brian, give him a lot of credit. He talked a lot about this during the campaign. He didn't necessarily endorse Donald Trump, but we've got to be able to talk about jobs. We've got to get back to talking about how do we compete better than the Republicans in this global economy. And this Rust Belt strategy that we're hearing that worked in those places up north, it worked in Georgia as well, because a lot of these jobs that we are losing in Georgia, these jobs that are being outsourced to different companies, are not only affecting folks in rural Georgia anymore, they're affecting folks in some of these metro counties like Atlanta and DeKalb County, Fulton, Cobb, and et cetera. So I think the third thing is, Dennis, is we cannot be afraid of being who we are as Democrats. And what I mean by that is that if Hillary Clinton had won, then I think we would have had to carry that national message. We've got to do what Republicans attempted to do in 2012, and that is not only broaden our base, but really go back to the basics of making sure that we stand on the principles that we believe in at a time when we hold President Trump-elect accountable.
I totally agree, and I think that if Hillary Clinton had done a better job of driving an economic message rather than the Trump is an unacceptable demagogue message, that she may have made the difference in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, states that she lost by very narrow margins. And were decisive in this race. And I agree, a lot of those messages that work for Trump in those states also work for Georgia in rural parts of our state. Absolutely agree with that. Here's the thing, whether it's Bernie Sanders or whether it's Donald Trump, both of whom had very populist economic messages of bringing back the good old days of manufacturing jobs that pay $30 an hour and you can retire at 55 with a full pension. I'm sorry, those aren't coming back. Not coming back. I don't care who the president is. And we've got to be very careful in how much we promise, because the global economy will not be rolled back by any particular president in any effort to try it to insulate us, to isolate us in the international markets is just going to make Americans poorer. And this is old Republican orthodoxy. Get goods cheap and then open up markets to sell our stuff to them. That is what this country's got to be around. That is why we are 5% of the population and 25% of the world's wealth. It's because we have run our economy by Republican free trade principles.
The one thing that I think the Democrats have got to focus on is public education. We saw that people are very concerned about public education, and I think that many of whom align themselves with the Democratic views on public education. The challenge is that we've got to go and take that message not only to the people who actually oppose OSD, but we've got to take that message to other people who probably voted for it and actually provide them with a solution. I truly believe, Dennis, that there were a lot of white voters in Georgia who went to the polls and probably voted for Donald Trump and probably voted for Johnny Isaacson, but voted no to OSD because public education is the one issue besides given that many white people voted for Barack Obama. But it's the one issue that I think that gives them opportunity to say, you know what, we care about the least of these. We care about poor children. And that's some of the things that I think that we can align ourselves with.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Political Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Nathan Deal. Thanks to both of you. Happy Thanksgiving in advance to you and your families.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Dennis, always good to be with you, brother.